Hello, Hughes fans. Today's pod is brought to you from the summit of League Two. Forget all those with games in hand. United are a massive 1 point clear as we hit the halfway stage of the season. On the episode today, we talk promotion odds, shocking weather, answer your questions, and bid a farewell to Harry Darling. Right. Hello, and a very warm welcome to today's Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jordan Warland. I'm hosting again because Swindle is on a break until Carlisle games start up again. Elsewhere, Julian is busy watching the cricket, so it leaves us as just a trio again. Happy to say that I'm flanked by Owen. Hello, Owen.
Hi, Jordan. Good afternoon.
We're going to talk about centre-backs leaving in a minute, Owen. So I thought I would start with a random question, put you on the spot. Mm-hmm. Who is your favourite ever centre-back for Cambridge United?
Favourite ever? Cool. Josh Coulson, I think. Really liked him. I really like Josh. He's a local lad, you know. He's part of that promotion team. Yeah, I'm going to go with him. He wasn't the greatest, but, you know, realistically, who else have you got?
I just really thought you were going to give me some obscure name from the 90s, Owen. But no, a good answer. We love Joshy Coulson. Flanked on the other side by Tom Walker. Afternoon, Tom.
Hello. How are we doing?
I have another random question to start the pod with you, Tom, but it's not the centre-back question. You're a betting man, so I want to know how many of your pounds would you bet on Cambridge United finishing the league in the position they currently find themselves in? That is number one.
I wouldn't put many of my pounds on it.
No,
I did. Someone else's pounds on it. I did place a bet in excitement after we beat Morecambe 5-0 that we would go on to win the league, which I hastily cashed out the morning after. So, it's not something that I'll be ploughing too many funds into.
We'll talk about promotion talk in due course on the pod, but I guess you're still in with a good shout for Mullin, top goal scorer, that bet, especially with old Watters being sold to Cardiff.
Yeah, it's looking good, to be fair. I think that's probably shaping up to be my best ever tip, my best ever bet.
What odds?
50-1 at the start.
Oh, lovely.
Of the season, which is lovely, which is really nice. I'm starting to wonder whether, like, kind of getting to a point now where he could potentially, like, not score another goal and still win it. That might be a bit of a stretch. Obviously, I think he's probably not wrapped up just yet, but, like, Watters was just behind him. He's obviously been sold. Johnson at Orient is injured, I think. And then the next one is, like, 8 or 9 goals behind him. So, that's looking nice.
We'll talk about Paul Mullin's form later in the pod as well, because he has gone 4 games without scoring. So perhaps he's thinking the same as you, Tom, but we'll come to that in due course. Since the last time we got together as a podcast, we crashed out of the pizza trophy. We picked up 2 hard fought draws against Colchester and Bradford, and we beat that pesky, cheating Southend. But before we sort of get into the games in more detail and talking points from there, I guess the first place for us to start today, the biggest talking point since we last got together was the sale of Harry Darling to MK Dons. I think it was announced, Friday evening, just before the game on the Saturday. I guess with the form of Paul Mullin, you know, he was always going to be the one that we would be thinking would be leaving this transfer window. But with the fact that Harry Darling was out of contract at the end of the summer, I wonder, Owen, if this was actually the right decision to let him go now?
It's sad to see him go because he's been all right. But I think, you know, of all the players we expected to go this window, namely Paul Mullin, a lot of people talking about Kyle Noyle as well, losing Harry Darling isn't like a real blow to the side. We've got Cundy there who can replace him. Okadina as well can play centre back, although we've not seen him do so yet. So it's a bit of a blow, yeah. But you know, I've heard some figures being bandied about, and from what it sounds like, you know, it sounds like a decent fee. The fact that the club have already turned down a couple of offers for him you know, makes me think that they're not the the Cambridge United of old who would have swapped him for a, you know, bag of balls and a set of fresh tracksuits. So, yeah, you know, he's out of contract at the end of the season. Cash in while you can and use the money towards replacing him.
I'm glad you mentioned the subject of the fee, because when we put our shout out for questions, the very first one we got was from Stuart asking, how much did we get for Harry Darling? Sorry, Stuart, the club don't share that information with us. We're simply not close enough to know that. But get the impression it was a good deal with, you know, with the sell on as well. Tom, were you surprised to see him go?
Yeah, it did seem to sort of come out of nowhere. But I think probably it's just, as you say, the season that we're having, you know, you immediately look towards like Mullin, Noyle maybe, and sort of the ones who are going to be attracting bids in January. And they're probably, if we're honest, the ones that we're, or were certainly most worried about losing. So yeah, certainly surprised to see him go in that respect. I think it probably represents pretty sensible business from the club, to be fair. You know, it is a shame to see him go. It's obviously a shame that he won't get to sort of see out the season with us. It's obviously always nice to have someone who's sort of come through the academy, sort of been with you the whole way, especially in a season like this with sort of a real chance of actually achieving something. But I think there's probably a couple of things that they'd have thought about when the bids were coming in, and that's firstly, what sort of impact is it going to have on this season for us, and can we get a good deal for the club? And I don't think it's going to impact us too much. It's certainly not something that's going to derail us. You know, it's really reassuring that we have a ready-made replacement in Cundy, who came in against Bradford and obviously kept the first clean sheet in a long while and played really, really well. And I think a lot of people were perhaps questioning why he wasn't starting even before Darling went. So in terms of the impact it has on us, I don't see it being, you know, I don't think it's going to ruin the season, although he's obviously a very talented young player. And then in terms of the deal that we've got for the club, as you say, the fee is something that we've obviously held pretty firm on. So we obviously have to presume that it's obviously a fee that they're quite happy with. We've obviously got a sell-on clause in there, which I think is really important, you know, just in case he would make it, you know, really, really big. So, yeah, a bit of a surprise and obviously a shame to see him go. But I think, you know, I'm speculating, but if this fee coming in means that we don't have to accept fees for other players who might derail our season, like Mullin and Noyle, then it's probably no bad thing, really.
You mentioned he came through the academy. Loaded question here, but do you feel that going, you know, coming through the youth ranks, does that sometimes afford a player sort of a level of kind of backing and less scrutiny that perhaps other players might get? Like, do you think that, I mean, yeah, do you think Harry Darling is good enough to, you know, step up to League One and maybe go on to even higher, you know, looking at, say, the obvious comparison, like Michael Morrison's had a really good career playing in the Championship. He admittedly is only 21, so it is, you know, defenders obviously do sort of mature a little bit later. But do you think Owen, he's got the, you know, he's got the potential to play higher than League One, especially because Milton Keynes are, you know, respectfully the sort of lower end of the League One table at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, he's got something about him, hasn't he? We've all seen that. He's, you know, he's quite strong. He's quite a talker. He's not the finished article, and I don't think Milton Keynes have bought him expecting him to be the finished article. You know, we've seen in a few games recently that teams have maybe targeted him a little bit, tried to stick their kind of big man on him and just lump all the balls towards Darling in the hope that he will make a mistake. That's something that can probably be coached out of him over time, over years. You know, you mentioned he's 21. You know, defenders don't really hit their peak till 25, 26, if not older. And so, yeah, will he play much higher than League One? Yeah, I don't know. You know, he certainly doesn't look the player that Morrison looked in his first season here. So, you know, if he has, you know, even half a good a career as Michael Morrison, he'll probably be quite pleased with himself and, you know, kind of financially set up from that. So, yeah, it's hard to say, but he's, you know, he's obviously good enough to be playing at the very top of League Two with us. So, you know, yeah, it stands to reason that he can play at, you know, the mid-table League One.
What part of his game do you reckon we'll miss the most? Like, we talked about other options coming in to cover for him, but is there anything in particular that you think that he offers or did offer the team, Tom, that another option that we currently have on the books doesn't offer us?
I think he was our quickest centre-back. And obviously pace in that position, you know, if maybe there are one or two mistakes, that means he can recover well. So that's obviously one thing. And then I think the other thing is his ability with the ball at his feet is really improving. And almost has been on a game by game basis, to be fair. And this is probably where, you know, Milton Keynes have sort of looked at him and seen him as someone to really invest in. I'll be honest, I've not watched a great deal of Milton Keynes, but, you know, from what you read and what you hear about them under Russell Martin, it's a really sort of attractive brand of football that they play, and that's probably why they've looked at him and thought he can slot in quite nicely there. I'll probably say those two things, but, you know, I'm not convinced that at this level you need your centre backs to be like, you know, John Stones, you know, really, really good and on the ball. Like, you know, they don't need to be midfielders. I don't want to kind of do the other defenders we've got a disservice, but I do feel like someone like, you know, Robbie Cundy, for example, you know, sort of head it, kick it, sort of centre back, it's quite valuable at this level anyway. I don't think he's necessarily as good on the ball as Darlin, but I don't think it's necessarily a sort of a downgrade. So if obviously there's one thing that I would maybe miss, it is that ability to sort of bring the ball out for the back and sort of play with his feet. You know, as I said before, I'm obviously disappointed to see him go. You know, you don't want to see good players leaving the club. But I think if I could have picked a player who realistically would have been attracting attention in January to sell, it probably would have been him, in all honesty. And I'm not that disappointed that we've done it, to be fair.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. His ability to play the ball. You know, we've seen some of his assists recently. That lovely ball that set Mullin up for that goal against Grimsby is a good example. But yeah, I think you're spot on that what he offers that none of the current centre backs do is distribution out from the back line. And, you know, Greg Taylor, for all his pros, his downfall is definitely his distribution. So yeah, I think that's something that we'll miss. I think it's a great move for him. You know, Milton Keynes, we might not like the club or what they stand for or so forth, but you can't argue the fact that they are, you know, they're set up. They obviously have ambitions beyond League One. So all the best to Harry Darling at his new club. I guess the next question then is, if we're talking about transfers out, hot topic for January is transfers in. And there's a few sort of areas and subjects that we can go through in this. But my first question is, does the sale of Harry Darling even does the sale of Harry Darling does that change the transfer plans that the club have for this last week of January? And do you think they'll move to bring in another centre back?
I don't think it changes things too much. I do think they'll go out and look to bring somebody in at least as cover. It's kind of an awkward one with Okadina, who can play there. You don't want too many sort of professional players sat out not playing, but I do feel that if there was to be an injury to Greg, if there was to be an injury to Cundy, if there was to be an injury to Okadina, we're very light there, and that's when you start risking, you know, maybe a kind of a serious drop off in form and sort of serious problems. So I think it'll just be a simple case of just getting sort of someone into cover. Obviously, in that instance, I don't know if sort of where are we now? Sort of 6-7 days until the window closes. I don't know if that's the right time to start searching for a first choice replacement. It feels a little bit late, but, you know, if there's somebody out there who is of the right quality, then, you know, absolutely go for it. But I think if it was me and I was making the decisions, I'd maybe just look to loan someone in. And then as for the rest of the plans, you know, maybe getting a fee and allows you to be a little bit more ambitious in terms of who you target for the other sort of positions that we're looking at. I know we've talked a lot about a winger, and they sound like they're, you know, really working quite hard to get someone in for that position. And then I guess, you know, with, like, you know, probably come on to Dallas leaving on loan, you know, do you go and get out of, you know, kind of a backup striker? And if so, again, maybe you can be a bit more ambitious in terms of who you're targeting there. So I don't think it changes things too much. We need cover. I think Bonner said in the sort of press release when Darlin's move was confirmed that they are going to look to do that. So, yeah, just purely just kind of bringing someone into cover, I think.
Oh, and you made a great point before we started recording that in true UTAS style, we'll record a podcast, put it out, and the second later the club will announce a signing. So anyone listening, apologies if this is out of date content come Monday morning. But we've had a question come in from Jack from Cumbria. He says, Leon Legg is currently out of favour at Port Vale. Would you bring him in? Anyone want to touch that subject?
No chance.
No chance. Wow.
Okay. He's experienced, but he's too old. He's not the kind of player we should be going for. You know, we've got this, with the exception of Wes, we've got this kind of pretty young team, you know, that are doing really well. You don't need Leon Legg. There's someone better out there than Leon Legg. He's, you know, his pace was going when we released him, and he's not got it back at Port Vale, and he's not going to get it back anytime soon, is he?
This podcast is doing nothing to mend bridges with Leon Legg. On a more serious note, Daniel sent us a question. He said, Will Paul Barry back Mark Bonner in the transfer window with a week left in what is our best chance of promotion since 2014? So, Owen, do you think we'll see backing in this last week? And if so, how much do you think we'll, you know, in terms of ins and outs, do you think we'll see?
I think they will. The board will back Bonner. I mean, I think they're always going to back him. They're not going to throw millions at him to try and get promotion. You know, I can't see us suddenly going in for like big name, big value players. But you know, it seems like a winger's top of Bonner's hit list. You know, talking about bringing in perhaps another centre back as well, and possibly a striker. Now Dallas has left. The losing Darling and losing Dallas probably doesn't really free up much in the way of wage budget. I mean, you know, they can't have been on a lot of money between the two of them. So, you know, we're going to have to find a little bit of money. I mean, Paul Barry just sent out a message to season ticket holders the other day, as well as some notes in the online program, just kind of saying that, you know, he thinks we can weather this storm of COVID and, you know, not having fans in the ground or the ground at full capacity or anything like that. So, you know, it doesn't seem like the board are totally skint. They've obviously brought these two new investors on as well. You know, we don't know much about those, but they've obviously got a little bit of money. So yeah, I think they'll back him. I think they'll be daft to say no. You've now got to get through the remainder of a busy season with, you know, two and a bit recognised centre backs and three recognised strikers. That's not going to happen. We'll see some movement, I'm sure.
If we didn't see any movement, and say in the unlikely situation that no one gets injured and the squad stays exactly as it is, do you think there's enough there to get us over the line, either for automatic promotion or a top seven finish and finish in the playoffs? Do you think there is enough, or do you think, you know, given just how many games we've got to play over the next couple of months, that it looks unlikely that we would finish strongly?
I think we need to add. It's a really small squad. If you look at the kind of squad numbers of some of the teams around us, they're all much higher. Mm-hmm. You know, realistically, we're an injury to Mullin and an injury to Greg or Cundy away from, you know, filled in a pretty second string team, really. You know, I know we've got Nibs who can score goals, but he's only got one this season. Okay, he's not played much, but, you know, he's not Paul Mullin, and we're not going to replace Paul Mullin. There's no one else that can do that. You know, Ironside's got 9 now for the season, I think. But you know, when you're a team that's looking to finish in the top three at least, you need a goal scorer, and you know, you need a solid defence. So yeah, I think we definitely have to bring people in, because it is a thin squad, and we don't want to be relying on kind of youth players and loanees when when crunch time comes.
Tom, do you think it's a bit like the season that we finally got out of the conference and we started well, and then, you know, there was kind of a sticky period sort of winter time, but then there was that signing, you know, Luke Chadwick joined, and there was kind of an extra bit of energy brought into the squad that, you know, a new sort of face kind of does. Do you think that's kind of a similar situation here, that, you know, bringing someone in, even if they're not a starter, might, you know, benefit the squad and sort of, you know, not mean that there's some kind of fatigue going into sort of the second half of the season?
Yeah, I think the circumstances are quite different from that particular window. If you can sort of compare the two, I think the January of that particular season, I think, was spent trying to replace two pretty big players who we'd lost, and obviously Maxwell and obviously Kwesi Appiah, who we've talked about quite a lot over the years. And you know, all the noises that are coming from the club, you know, we obviously talked about Darlin a little bit and how we've probably already replaced him with Cundy, to be fair, but the club are kind of making all the right noises, and that we might, you know, we're not going to lose any, you know, key players now. And just talking about, is Bonner going to be backed? I think that's the best backing that he can have, that they're not going to send his best players from under him. There's undoubtedly been interest in Mullin. There's undoubtedly been inquiries about him throughout January. And I think for the board to sort of stand up and say, we would rather lose this guy on a free than sell him now, I think that's in many ways the best backing he can get. And let's not forget, we've also extended, Boateng's loan. I do agree, though. I think, obviously not a similar player in terms of maybe sort of reputation or like, even like the way that they play to Chadwick, but I think certainly the squad just needs freshening up a little bit. I think actually it'd probably be quite irresponsible in a way to spend this week bringing in like 5 and 6 new players just to look as if they're backing him. I think it just needs maybe 1 or 2 additions just to kind of keep things ticking over. We obviously brought in Okadina, who, you know, hasn't had much game time yet, but I'm sure we'll kind of have a part to play. I think this winger is absolutely essential, just to give us another option there. I think we, you know, saw at times during the game against Bradford, maybe we could have just done with that extra spark out wide. So that for me is important. And then, yeah, maybe just kind of moving 1 or 2 things around. Obviously, Dallas went out. If you can go and bring in like a decent, not necessarily a fourth choice striker, I don't think you ever want to go out and look for a fourth choice striker, but you know, freshen the squad up in that sense. But I don't see us being really, really active in the last week. I think there's 1 or 2 things to address, and I've got no doubt that they'll do that. But I don't see it being like, you know, 4 and 5 players coming in.
Here's a question you'll love to answer, Tom. If news breaks next week that Mitov's injury is a bad one, do you trust Callum Burton for the period of time that Mitov's out, or would you look to sign a goalkeeper?
I think we've talked about it a little bit already. I would quite, you know, it's obviously, I'm probably being greedy a little bit, but I would quite like us to sign one anyway. If obviously the budget was to allow it, I don't think it's a priority at all. But I think we've talked all season about the sort of goalkeeping situation. I think Mitov's done okay, and probably, you know, is rightfully the number one choice goalkeeper, apart from that sort of weird 4 or 5 game spell during December where Burton was playing. I don't want to be too harsh on Burton, because obviously, I guess in the grand scheme of things, he's not really played that much. I think he had a little bit at the end of last season, and sort of cup games here and there at the start of last season. And we talked about it before as well. Like, I feel more confident when Mitov is playing. It's not to say that it would be a huge concern, and like, having to play Burton is like something that's going to ruin our chances of promotion. I wouldn't say that at all. I wouldn't say I don't trust him. I just trust Nitov more. That's all I'll say on the matter. And I know I've sat on the fence massively there, but I think you sort of know what I'm getting at.
Petition's answer.
Owen, we've had a question come in specifically for you. It says, are you now a Weymouth fan?
Me?
Well, I'm guessing it's to do with the fact that you're a big Andy Dallas fan and he's moved there. So keeping an eye out for the Weymouth results?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to them smashing their way to promotion with, 150-odd goals in the remainder of the season. Definitely going to happen.
I mean, he's gone for the month. I guess it's safe to assume we'll probably look to extend it. What level are Weymouth? Are they conference or are they lower? I've not prepared. Right, I've not prepared for hosting for again. They're right at the bottom. Okay.
That's always good, isn't it? Good. Classic standard you can expect from us. They're sort of towards the bottom of the conference. But having said that, went in yesterday, 1-0 win, immediate impact. Can't ask too much more than that. Maybe there's a player in there after all.
Do you think he'll do well in the conference? I mean, he's lightweight. So I fear that he might struggle, but what about you two?
It's just about games, isn't it? It's just about games for Dallas. I wouldn't be putting too much money on him finishing anywhere near the top goal scorer of the conference. I don't think in the month that he's there initially, he's going to sort of break any records. But, if he can go there and play some games and maybe grab one or two goals and sort of get involved with a team that improves, there may be something to build on for him. I'll be honest, I think this is probably the last we've seen of him for us. It's just not one that's worked out. These things happen. But I guess for him, it's about just kind of really, again, I don't want to sound too harsh, but maybe just like proving his worth as a player who probably sees himself above that level. He obviously came from Rangers, massive club, good, decent pedigree, you'd say. We'd probably consider it a step down to have come to us. So to end up on loan at Weymouth will probably be a disappointment for him, let's not be honest. And I don't know if we'll necessarily see his immediate future there, because it is miles away from where he's from. Like, I must have been feeling a bit sorry for him when I saw the news announced, because it looks like a grim move, doesn't it? Like, it feels like a proper horrid loan move, but. Fair play to him. If he can go there, get some games, score one or two, then that'd be good.
I mean, that's one of the kind of criticisms of him that often comes up, isn't it? Is the fact that he's maybe a little bit homesick, and he's not really settled in Cambridge, and now he's moved to is there anywhere in the country further from Scotland than Weymouth is? It's like, yeah, strange one, but maybe that's all that came in for him. He's hardly set the world on fire here, has he? And if you're looking for a striker when you're in a relegation battle, or you're trying to kind of get clear of a relegation battle, then you're looking for someone who's got a bit of pedigree and has played a bit more than kind of 90 minutes against Peterborough under 23s in the Pizza Trophy.
We'll close part one on the subject of bad players. We've had a question come in from Pete. It sounds like Pete's been reading the message board, and there's some talk on there about bad players. Pete's question is, should any player who signed and played for Rob Newman be exempt from any part of any worst player polls or discussions? Pete goes on to say, Buzz kept us in the conference and meant we could stabilise, so I think they should be exempt personally. So I guess that's all coming about from that very first season in the conference where we had a band of misfits, we should say, put together on a very small budget, who in reality probably punched above their weight, sort of mid-table conference finish come the end of it. What do you think, looking back on that period that Rob Newman looked after the club and some of those questionable players, should they be exempt from discussions about worst players ever? Do they fall into that category of kind of protected because they did the job?
No, I don't think so. Some of them were really, really fucking dreadful, weren't they?
Like, brutal from Owen.
The likes of Stacey Caldicott, just mercenary, dreadful players. Like, okay, maybe not mercenary, because I think they were probably getting paid a pittance, but some of those names. I was having a look at that squad earlier, and you know, Danny Carey Bertram up front, like, oh Jesus Christ, like,
didn't he come to us with a bit, I don't want to say pedigree, but didn't he have like an all right career before he came to us? Wasn't he playing league football? Or I mean, I'm thinking of people like David Chick and Mark Angel, who were really bad.
Yeah.
I seem to think DCB wasn't as bad compared to those.
I mean, he scored a couple of goals, didn't he? But, you know, at the end of the day, that team overperformed. You know, it really did. It probably should have gone down again. You know, fair play to those players for coming here and wanting to play for fuck all at a team that was going to, you know, that no one knew was even going to stay in business for that entire season. But, you know, when you look back at that squad, there was also some pretty handy players in there. You know, where Courtney Pitt, you know, at that stage, decent player. Michael Morrison went on to, you know, have a great career at championship level. Yeah, Josh Simpson went on to have a great career, you know, at kind of like League One level. You know, there's some decent players there. But yeah, there was also a lot
of dross.
Yeah.
Tom, how well do you remember that season?
I absolutely love that response from Owen. That's super. It perfectly like encapsulates the life of a lower league fan, doesn't it? Trying to put a bit of respect on the names of a squad that held this football club together against all odds. And the response is no, they were fucking dreadful. I think that's super. Not that well, to be honest. I think it's just a period in our time where it was about getting by, wasn't it? Probably they do deserve a bit more respect, and certainly Newman does. I think on the face of it, you look at sort of a mid-table conference finish in your first season down there, and you know, I know our situation was quite perilous, but I think most football league clubs, when they go into the conference, the initial thing is let's just get straight back up, and it's obviously never really the way. But when you just do it, like, you know, dig a little bit deeper, you can see that it was a really, well, very important job, and it was really well done. A lot of the players that were in that squad, they weren't that memorable, certainly not for the right reasons. But yeah, I feel like it's important to at least give them respect of acknowledging the role they played in the ongoing existence of the football club. But yeah, not one. I'm probably not going to have a David Chick framed shirt on my wall anytime soon.
I'm still trying to put together a case for Rob Newman joining the UTAS Hall of Fame. So that will be a podcast at some point in the future. Owen's not going to be involved in that one. I found that out from his response there. So if anyone is listening and would like to come on and take Owen's place and stick up for Rob Newman, do get in touch via the socials. And that's a good part. That's a good place to stop for part one. Join us in part two, where we'll look back at the most recent games and have a talk about upcoming fixtures against Salford and Crawley. Welcome back. Part two of Under the Abbey Stand. We're going to look back at the most recent results for United, starting with yesterday's 0-0 draw with Bradford. We talked a lot in the first half about Harry Darling and Robbie Cundy, but it needs to be pointed out that the result yesterday was our first clean sheet since the 27th of October. We've had a question come in from Tom Dobbin. He asks, is this a coincidence? And I wonder, Owen, sort of going forward, do you feel confident having Robbie Cundy in a centre-back as a sort of long-term, well, until the end of the season replacement, at least for the departed Darling?
Yeah, I think so. He's made mistakes this season, but, you know, so has Darling, so has Greg. At this level, players are going to make mistakes. No one's going to put in 10 out of 10 performance every week. For what it's worth, he came in, he was good yesterday. He was pretty decent. To answer Tom's question there, is it a coincidence? Yeah, it probably is, isn't it? It's like, you know, Darling's not that bad. He's certainly not been at fault for many of our goals. Maybe a couple, but no more so, you know, Cundy was when he had a run of the team earlier. Greg has been as well. So, Yeah, I'm happy enough with Cundy there.
I guess it's worth remembering that Cundy was first choice centre back for a period of the season before sort of Darling replaced him, and I think that sort of period of time we did clock up quite a few clean sheets anyway. So interesting to see how he plays for the rest of the season. Turning to the result itself, I guess it's a bit of a peculiar one because you look at it on paper and you say a home game against a team that are 19th in the division going into the game should really be backing us to win that. But I felt like come full time, a draw was the correct result. It was a fair result. Tom, what, would you take a point or do you think that was points dropped?
I think it was just a really typical League Two game. And you can look at it from both angles. I think the reason that I wasn't necessarily really, really disappointed with it was because of the sort of chance they had where I think Mubbin, the left back, had a shot and it sort of hit both posts and obviously rolled across the goal line. Really put like a sort of heart and mouth moment. But I think if you look on the face of it, I think we probably created more chances. They just had the one that sort of stood out. I feel like for someone who's obviously going for the golden boot in a team that is looking to get automatically promoted, I would be hoping that Marlin would do better with the chance that he had just before half-time than what he did. And, you know, the same, I think, applies to one of the chances he had against Colchester as well. So that's a couple in a week. And I know he's obviously been brilliant for us, but you know, they're the moments that define seasons. I'm not overly disappointed. I think it's really notable and really important that we got a clean sheet, especially with the news that Darling had gone. I thought Cundy and Digby in particular were absolutely excellent. I think the Digger has been good for us, but I think against Bradford is probably as well as I've seen him play since the sort of early part of the season, where he was really, really kind of at the forefront of everything that we were doing, really. And you know, had a quick look. I believe that's the first league clean sheet we've kept since October, which is mad to think, especially when you think some of the results we picked up in that time. So that's really good, and I guess sort of stops the rot in that respect. It's not the worst result, but you know, we've said for a long time now the way that you were successful at this level is just to relentlessly just pick up points wherever they come from, whatever sort of form they come in. And like I say, I'm disappointed because we could have quite easily won the game. But by the sort of same measure, we could quite easily have lost the game as well. So I think you take the point. I think in the context of the week that we had, it's probably not the worst sort of return. Obviously, they keep coming, kind of another two or three very difficult fixtures coming up. So just take the point, go into the next one. And obviously, you know, we're still top of the league for now. Yeah. I mean, to obviously other teams not playing, etc. I haven't played a couple of games more, but not overly disappointed, but feel like on another day we could have snatched something.
Yeah, I felt like it was a good watch actually for a 0-0, or at least it wasn't a bad watch. Absolutely agree. I thought Digby was showing the sort of form he was showing pre-injury, which is really encouraging. Looking sort of for the rest of the season, if he can keep it going at that sort of level. It felt like first half, it took us a little while to get on top, but when we did get on top, we were playing some nice football. We were creating some good chances. Probably, you know, like Tom said, should have scored just on the stroke of half time, that chance you would have backed Mullin to go through and score. And then it felt a little bit, Owen, that in the second half, we perhaps didn't get going, and we weren't, you know, we weren't flowing as much when compared to the first half. And I wonder if it was a factor, the fact that we have obviously been playing quite a lot of games recently, whereas Bradford, this was their first game since the 29th of December. And I was looking this up. They've played three times since they beat us, at their place, whereas we've played seven. So do you think, Owen, that sort of fatigue and tiredness was a factor against Bradford, at least second half?
Yeah, I think so. I think Bonner's even said as much, hasn't he, that you know, the lads have been playing a lot of games. And, you know, as we said in the first half of the pod, you know, we're a small squad. The first 11 is pretty much the first 11, and everyone on the bench is kind of very much a second choice, maybe with one or two exceptions. But it's they've been playing a lot of games. They've been playing a lot of games in difficult conditions, on really difficult pitches. If you look at the pitches at, you know, Colchester especially, you know, it was like playing up your local rec, wasn't it? It was awful. Mm-hmm. Pitch of the Abbey's not much better this year. I was reading somewhere that Ian Darler couldn't do some of the work he wanted to over the summer because it was a shorter pre-season because of, you know, obviously like social distancing and all that. We've also had some really bad weather in Cambridge recently as well, which hasn't helped. I mean, we had snow yesterday. Like, it was, you know, snow settling on an already wet pitch just going to make things worse. So, you know, heavy pitch, lots of games in quick succession. I mean, by the end of January, we're going to have played 8-9 games, something like that. We had 8 games in November, I think. We had a lot in December. It's, you know, they're coming thick and fast. And for a lot of the teams, they're kind of fortunate / unfortunate, if you look at the bigger picture. But kind of, you know, a lot of teams have had coronavirus suspensions, postponements of games. You know, Carlisle haven't played in ages. Bradford hadn't played all year. And, you know, here we are chugging on week in, week out. And we've already had to play our, you know, we've had one rearranged fixture this year and we've already squeezed it in. It's it's difficult, isn't it?
Would you rather be playing the games now on these sort of tougher pitches to know that when it comes to the latter part of the season, the run-in as it were, you've perhaps got more of a gap between games? Or do you think this is going to come round and sort of bite us in the arse, and some teams, you know, you mentioned Carlisle, some teams come, say, you know, March, April, when the weather gets better, are going to be perhaps in an unfair position where they might be able to get momentum going, and perhaps it favours them having more games in that sort of latter part of the season. Like, of the two, which would you rather go for, do you think? Do you think there would be much difference between the two as well?
You go either way, couldn't it? I mean, points on the board are always good. But at the same time, there's nothing more disheartening than, you know, being at the start of May, maybe 2 games from the end of the season, and just watching a team come and, you know, pick up points after points after points in a, you know, maybe in a 2-week period, they could have like 4 or 5 games and just overhaul you when you think the job's done. That's going to be really frustrating. But at the same time, you know, towards the end of the season, everyone's knackered. It's been a hard season. You know, the teams that, you know, like Carlisle, like others down there that are having games postponed, they're still training and that, you know, they're still doing, they're still working. They're still going to be just as tired as we are in, you know, at the end of April, start of May, even if they've played 4 or 5 games less. So, you know, in a way, it's going to be harder for them maybe to put in performance after performance to get the points they need. And yeah, I don't know. I just don't know, do you?
There's, it predates me as a United fan, but there will be people hopefully listening to this podcast that will remember, I think it was our first promotion in that sort of crazy run of sort of going from Division 4 to Division 1, where, like, at the very end of the season, we played a ridiculous amount of games. I think we were playing sort of 2-3 games a week and still managed to, you know, get over the line. So I guess it could swing you in the favour of momentum, or like you say, it could swing the other way and, you know, be a negative if you've got so many games in a short space of time. Tom, any thoughts on which one would you rather? Do you think we're in the better position having played the games, or would you rather play more games, you know, when pitches are in a better state?
I think it's easy to say because we are top of the league, having played more games than anyone else pretty much in the league. But I would, well, pretty much any season, but especially this season, I think I'd rather just have the points on the board. And I'd rather have the games played as well, to be honest, because I think there's a tendency with football fans, and it's kind of understandable, is that you look at a game in hand and you view it as a win. Like, you're still going to play the game, you're still going to play the fixture and go and win it. So just because maybe like Exeter might have 3 or 4 games in hand over us, like, it doesn't, that's not like plus like 9 or 12 points. Like, it's League Two, teams are going to drop points, and I just feel like in this season, it's very, I think it can basically go one way or the other. I think there will inevitably be one team who sort of surges up the table with like a number of games in quick succession towards the end of the season. But I just think, like, even for us, having played as many games as we have, and we're probably the one team in the league that hasn't had really any impact on our fixture list at all, barring the sort of calamities of the South End earlier on in the season. Like, our fixture list is still mental. Like, it's still it's still heavy. And I wouldn't really like to be going into the end of a season still having to play, like, there's going to be clubs playing like 10 games in like April. Like,
yeah,
I think points on the board is more important. That's my stance on it. But like I said, I can understand that's probably an easy viewpoint from the top of the league, having played more games than anyone else sort of around us, certainly. And the other thing as well is points per game. I think it's worth taking that into account. You know, hopefully we can finish the season on the pitch, but you know, obviously in recent weeks things have been getting very, very bad with the sort of situation surrounding the pandemic, and you know, you sort of never know how things are going to go. I think the sort of lower levels of the National League have been suspended for a week or two, so it's worth taking that into account. And I think at the moment we've finished probably just outside the top three on points per game. I checked it before the game yesterday, but I don't know how it sort of line up now. But I think games played is better than games in hand at this stage. Yeah. To be absolutely honest.
Well, I'll throw some positives at you. Someone I was reading on the message board last night, someone was saying that if all the teams win all their games in hand, which is a big ask, we would still be in the top seven, admittedly either sixth or seventh. So it's still, we're still competitive. And I saw something earlier today as well. A Carlisle fan posted in one of sort of the Facebook sort of League Two groups a little graphic of the clubs that are in and around Carlisle and the points that they've dropped over the last three games where Carlisle have not been playing. And actually we are the top of the least points dropped. We've only dropped four. And I think you could argue that actually, if you look at the content of the games, even then they weren't points dropped because they, you know, were playing sort of a difficult, you know, side in Colchester on a difficult pitch, ditto Bradford on a difficult pitch. I think Bradford will probably have the potential to maybe do us some favours in the latter part of the season. They seem to be picking up some good form. They've brought in a lot of people and so forth. So there's some positives there. I will throw a negative at you both, though, to get your thoughts on this. My biggest complaint from the Bradford game, and it's, you know, actually it was also present in the Colchester and Southend fixtures as well, is our inability to perform at set pieces, whether it be, well, predominantly corners, but free kicks as well haven't been particularly great. And there's a stat knocking around saying that we're the joint lowest goal scorers from set pieces in League Two. What do we make of that? Because we've obviously got players in the squad that can cross the ball. It's just not working at the moment.
It's so strange because, like, you look at who's taking the set pieces and like, especially at corners, like a lot of the time it's Wes, and like they're not beating the first man. Like it's very, very weird. And yeah, I mean, I think like it's such a good opportunity as well. Like there's times where like we had free kicks sort of in and around the edge of the box against Bradford, especially. And you know, you back players of the ability of some of ours to at least like test the keeper or put in sort of a testing cross. And a lot of the time it's just not even reaching a player at all. It's a frustration, but I guess it's a frustration just, you know, when you see professional footballers not being the first man at a corner, you know, whether it's us or whether it's any football match that you watch, it does make you sort of, fucking, but what are you doing? Like, you should be better than that. So yeah, it's a frustration, but you know, I don't know if I can mix it up. Like, can someone else take him? Like, is that allowed? Like, I don't know. Like, after sort of four and five crap corners, like, surely someone's just saying, I'll take the next one. I might do a bit better. Like, I don't know. It's a cause of frustration.
Yeah, it's one of those topics that's hard to talk about in the pod because we're not coaches. Like, I don't know how to sort of say how we can do corners better. You know, like, my assumption is that people, you know, if you're a professional footballer, you can cross the ball and beat the first man. So yeah, maybe we'll see some improvement as the season goes on. So the first game of sort of the period since we last did a pod was away to Colchester. I guess it was one of those games that you would file under a difficult away game and the kind of one that you would just want to get in, get a result and get out, very similar to the Grimsby game. It was also a game that saw Harvey Nibbs score. I don't know if that was his first league goal of the season. It definitely feels like he's not scored many. He's had a little bit of an extended run in the team recently, Owen, and I just wondered what your, you know, are you seeing some encouraging signs from Harvey Nibbs? And also, we've had a question from the Cambridge Bear saying, who would you rather play up top alongside Mullin, Nibbs or Ironside?
I'm going to answer the question first. Ironside, any day of the week, I think he suits our style of play better. He's got a really good understanding with Mullin, and he's got, you know, nine goals this season. So, yeah, Ironside for me. But that doesn't mean I don't rate Nibbs. I like Nibbs. He'll run all day. He's a hard-working player. He brings something a bit different to the team in that he'll run at players more than Ironside will. He's got pace. He knows where the goal is as well. You know, I think he was our top scorer last season with maybe 8 or 9 goals, which, you know, for his first season in professional football, not too bad a return, I don't think. He's got bags of potential. The club obviously thinks so as well. You know, they see him in training every day. He got a new contract earlier this season. So, you know, I think Nibbs is, I think he's maybe a little bit unfortunate that Mullin and Ironside have gelled so well. But, you know, I also think he's someone that is a good option to have on the bench. And, you know, I won't be too upset if he's still here next season, whatever league we're in, because I think he can be a useful player.
Tom, is it a straightforward one for you? Is it Ironside every day?
I feel like Ironside brings more out of Mullin, which is probably more important. And sort of who plays with him is kind of what they can do for the main man.
Especially against like Bradford yesterday, Ironside was heroic in how he dealt with, you know, the two sort of O'Connors, the pair of centre backs they had. He did a lot of work, unsung work, sort of, you know, keeping them occupied to try and sort of bring Mullin into the game. Sorry, Tom, I cut in.
I think Ironside's having, like, I'm not saying that he's been underrated, because I think people have sort of commented on how well he's done, but like, it's probably gone under the radar a little bit, like the level of season that he's actually having, just because of how, quite frankly, ridiculous Mullin's season has been. I think he's on course to score like 15 or 20 goals this season. How long is it since we've had one centre forward, let alone two, who are like on course to score even that level? So I think Ironside probably plays on merit, but I think that they're obviously completely different players and have completely different sort of strengths and attributes. It doesn't seem to be, I'm trying to think of kind of the right way to articulate this, but it doesn't seem to be that Bonner has a preference of the pair that he would play. It just seems to take it on a game by game basis, which I don't think is a bad way to do it, to be fair. I think it probably is frustrating a little bit for Nibbs, because it's probably not quite kicked on in the way that he has, but I think the club have backed him well with, I think, an extended contract a bit earlier on in the season. And I think there's real potential in there. I think when he first joined, he was very raw. And he's, I think, although he's not scoring many and sort of it's really good that he got his first league goal against Colchester, although he's not scored that many, I feel like he just looks sharp. Like he just looks like, just looks very quick. And I think his ability to get in the right places is something that I don't think you can teach. I don't think you can, but like, you can't I don't think you can buy that sort of instinct. And you know, logic says that if you're in the right place, more often than not, you're going to sort of get on the end of something, which is exactly how the goal came about at Colchester. So I wouldn't say that I've got a massive preference for who plays. I think it's funny when you watch us away at the moment, because you obviously have to listen to the home commentary. And every time the Ironside's on the bench, like, the sort of home commentary team are like marveling at the fact that we're bringing this guy off the bench who scored like 9 goals. It's probably fair enough. I guess it kind of just kind of shows where we're at, I think. But just kind of overall, I'd probably say that for me, Ironside would probably just edge it, firstly because of his goal return and the season he's having, but also because of what he does for Mullin. But that's no disrespect to Tarvey Nibbs. I think he's a terrific young player.
Yeah, you mentioned the positions he's getting in. I thought he was really impressive. Grimsby away. And, you know, if I was to be overly critical, he probably should have got a goal that day, but definitely came very close, didn't he? You mentioned, Tom, the magnificent season that Paul Mullin's having, which is obviously an understatement. However, it's no goals in 4 league games now. Should we have a full-on Cambridge United fan meltdown, or is it not that big an issue? What do we think there? Is it just a sort of a, you know, we're playing a lot of games and maybe it's sort of slowing him down a bit, perhaps he needs a bit of a break, or is it just been unfortunate?
I think it's a bit of a natural regression. As brilliant as it would have been, I don't think he was ever going to continue scoring at the rate that he was sort of before Christmas. And if he did, he'd have had a genuinely like landmark season for any player at this level, probably ever. I do think there's been chances that we obviously touched on one against Bradford, and I think there was one right at the end of the Colchester match that I think you would back someone who's having the season that he's having to score those, basically. I still feel like he just looks dangerous. I think, again, you know, similar with Nibbs, I think it's probably more reassuring that he's still getting in the right areas. You know, it's not like his game's fallen off a cliff in the last 4 games. He's still getting in the right areas. He's maybe just not having quite the that kind of killer instinct that he had earlier on in the season. And, you know, like, let's not forget, although he's, you know, scored so many goals already, he's still a League Two centre forward. Like, he's going to miss chances. But the other good thing when you've got a striker like that and they have gone a few games out scoring, like, you know that they're due one. And that's something that we've not had for a long time. Like, a lot of the, you know, we've been looking to players and like, where are the goals coming from? And now you look at Mullin, although he's gone a few games without a goal, like, you know that he's there, just like waiting for that opportunity. So I'm not too concerned. I don't think there's anything to melt down about. You know, he might finish the season with like 35 goals instead of 40. That's all right.
Owen, you love a meltdown. Are you coping okay, or?
I'm doing all right. I mean, obviously we can't drop him for Andy Dallas now, which, huge mistake for the club. Huge mistake there. Season over. But one thing I will say about Mullin is he doesn't get much love from referees, does he? They don't like him very much. He's, you know, I think he's maybe got a bit of a mouth on him. He commits a lot of fouls. I think if there was one criticism in his game, it is he gives as good as he gets. You know, you're a centre forward, mate. You're always going to get tough attention from big defenders, you know, especially a centre forward who's already on kind of 18 odd goals for the season. You're going to get kicked a mat. You've got to learn to deal with it. You've got to learn just to shrug it off and get away from him, make the turn somehow, because if you go down, if you back into him at every opportunity, the ref's always going to give a free kick against you. He always is, you know. He's never going to give. It's much easier to give a defending team a free kick on the edge of their box than give the attacker a free kick there, isn't it? So, he's still getting in positions. He's been unlucky. No, we'll keep him in the team. You know, he's scored tons of goals already. He's got more in him. Yeah, I'm not that worried.
Talking about players that have a mouth on them, Mr. Luke Hannan, not going through the best patch of form at the moment, is he? He went off injured against Colchester, sat out Southend, returned to the starting lineup against Bradford yesterday, which for me was a bit of a surprise. He looked quite hurt as he left the pitch against Colchester. I wonder if yesterday's performance was perhaps, you know, a result of sort of being injured and perhaps not being fully fit, but how important do you think it is, returning to the subject of signing a right-sided midfielder, how important is it to sort of bring someone in that position to, you know, freshen it up because of, you know, Hannant's form? And also, you know, he doesn't seem to be sort of trusting Leon Davis to start at the moment. So what do we think about Luke Hannant?
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it, with the Leon Davis thing? You know, on paper, he's a kind of ready-made replacement. Hannant started the season superbly. He was incredible at the start of the season. He links up really well with Wes, still does, but his form isn't what it has been. And I'm sure he'll probably admit it if you speak to him that he's not been playing, you know, to the level he wants to play. Is that a result of getting kicked a lot, you know, having a few niggling injuries? They're just starting to take their toll on him a little bit at this stage of the season. You know, you could tell how frustrated he was when he went off at Bradford. You know, he got booked for dissent. I think I read on Twitter he told the ref he was shit.
An accurate statement.
Yeah, absolutely accurate, because I can't remember the lad's name, but he was a terrible ref, weren't he? One of the worst I've seen in a long time. But, you know, I don't want to get into moaning about refs, because they're all shit at this level. They're always going to be. And even when we get Bobby Madley in against Southend, he was dreadful in the first half, gave us nothing. Second half, gave them nothing, gave us everything. So, yeah, refs are refs. But Hannant, I don't know. I think his form will come back. I just think he needs a break. He needs a bit of a rest.
Do you think he's the kind of player that is noticing the change in the pitches? You know, does his style of play suit a nicer sort of surface? You know, you mentioned, Owen, that his standards at the start of the season were really high, and it's really dropped off the last few weeks. And is it a coincidence that he's, because he's playing on pretty boggy weather and impacted pitches, or do you think it's something bigger than that, Tom?
I just think he's a bit tired. I think it's that simple. I think the way that he obviously plays the game is with so much energy that, you know, I've obviously not seen his running stats, so I don't know if he's running less or whatever. And I'm not here trying to sort of dig out his work ethic, so I don't think that's ever going to be an issue with him. But I just think it's a simple case that he's just a bit burned out at the moment. I think Bonner touched on it a little bit in a sort of post-match interview. Just said, like, it's a really tired group at the moment. I think Hannant's probably the best example of that. I was quite surprised that he went straight back in, I'll be honest. I felt he probably could have done with a couple of weeks out as well, to be honest. Maybe this is just the issue with not having that option on the right wing that we would like. And that's where Bonham, you know, maybe he's been forced to play him and you know, maybe it kind of aggravated an injury, who knows. But if he had maybe another winger, he might obviously had that option to leave him out, but maybe he just doesn't feel he's got that at the moment. I think Leon Davis is a good player. I think he's played well when he's sort of come in the main, but I feel like I don't feel like Bonham wants to start with him, and if Hannant is available, he will play. I get kind of, they're completely different players, but I get kind of quite strong Ryan Donaldson vibes from Hannant. I think just the way that his form seems to, he's really either in or he's just really either out, like it's either his day or it's really just not. So I hope he hasn't fallen off a cliff in the way that Donaldson did after that Man United game, let's not forget. But I just think it's a simple case with probably every player in the world at the moment. They're all just a bit tired. They've played a lot of football in relatively short period of time. And he's probably just feeling the effects of that. The pitches probably don't help. I think pitches always, you know, they always get heavier this time of the year, don't they? There's not a lot you can do about that, unfortunately. Yeah, I think just the way that he plays the game and sort of amount of football he's played, it's only natural that there's going to be some sort of decline. There's going to be some sort of fatigue in there. And I think that's basically what we're seeing.
We saw Leon Davis return to the starting lineup. Likewise, Jack Ardale, when we went to Southend in a more sort of conventional 4-4-2, we saw Ironsides starting up top as well. So it seems like we've got that option, you know, of a sort of a plan B if you know, Houlihan and Hannant aren't available. It did feel a little bit like the Southend game was sort of get by with what we had available. Don't worry too much about how beautiful it was on the pitch, similar to, I guess, to the Grimsby result. Tom, how good did it feel to beat Southend given everything that went on earlier in the season and a postponement?
Yeah, really good. Just felt right that we won. Like, it just felt like they're points that we should already have anyway. We're not going to talk about what happened before. I don't think that's what comes into it. But like, I think over the last sort of, you know, the way that they conducted themselves, postponing the game in the manner that they did, for the reasons that they did, which were obviously just because they had a few injuries and didn't fancy it. And there's probably still some sort of investigation going on into that. I don't think it takes a massive inquest to see what's happened there. They tried to play the game and it didn't come off. They're a horrible little football team as well. McCormack and Dimitriou in the middle, like, fuck off. Like, they're just shit. I was really, really concerned when we went behind there, because like, if we'd have lost that game, I think we would have been well within our rights to have been absolutely fuming that it even take place in the first place. But like you say, I think it was just a case of getting in there, getting the result. And I think the way that we won was quite sweet, actually. Obviously, good to see Ironside get the winner. Idale's goal was absolutely brilliant. Like, unbelievable technique to bring it down and then to kind of, you know, take it on the half volley. Like you say, first half, I didn't think we were particularly helped by the referee, and, you know, playing against a bunch of twats like that obviously doesn't help. But
well, there was the wind as well, wasn't there? That was the big factor.
Yeah,
both halves.
Yeah, that didn't help. But yeah, to be fair, I think Bobby Madley he helps out a little bit in the second half. It's fair to say they got absolutely nothing out of him. They got no change from whatsoever in the second half. But yeah, it was just good. It just felt right that we won it, and, you know, massive win, obviously, at the top of the league. And I think the way that it sort of happened with, let's be honest, if we'd have played them at the time of the original fixture, we would have absolutely battered them, and we would have really probably quite humiliated them. But I think the way that they sort of postponed the game at late notice last time, for us to then play the rearranged fixture, which they were probably hoping they would have got something out of the strength of the team with two or three more additions in there, to win that game that sends them bottom and us top. Yeah, it felt quite good.
Owen, what was sweeter, Iredale's volley or Mullins sort of takedown and assist for Ironside's goal? Because both were class.
Both were class. I actually thought Iredale had a really poor game, with the exception of his goal. He really struggled in the game. I thought it was one of his worst for us, and he's been brilliant this season. He's been really, really good, with the exception of Mullin and Wes. He's probably one of our best signings, but we made him the off season, quite surprisingly too. You know, I think we spoke about it on a previous pod actually, that, you know, the left back is not a sexy position. No one got excited when he came in. It's like, here's this lad, he's come from Carlisle, don't know nothing about him. Yeah, and he's actually turned out to be really decent. But yeah, he had a bit of an off game against Southend, but took that goal absolutely superbly. It was sweet. It got us back in the game. But the winner, come on, you got everyone loves the late winner. Everyone loves the winner against, you know, especially against a team like Southend, a team that have just, you know, shithoused their way through that game. You know, we're time wasting from early on. Were nasty, were putting in lots of nasty fouls, were getting up in our players' faces. It was just a nasty game. It was a nasty game, and it's great that we won, and it's even greater that we sent them to the bottom of the league, which hopefully is where they'll stay.
Yeah, I guess it's worth pointing out that whilst he hasn't scored in four games, you know, there is still a lot more to Mullen's game, and yeah, he's chipping in with assists, so it's not like he's bringing nothing to the team, far from it. We've talked about how January has been this very busy period of, you know, Saturday Tuesday. Unfortunately, it goes again this week, and we're off to Manchester for a tough game away to Salford on Tuesday night. It feels like, I don't know, for me, I was thinking about this before we started recording, it feels like we've not you know, we've played so many games over the last sort of, you know, month, Christmas period. But yet it doesn't feel like we've played like a really competitive game. And what I mean by that is like playing like a team that's in and around us in the playoffs. And there was a point sort of October time where it seemed that we were playing those better fancy teams quite frequently. So it feels like we've not played like a testing game since earlier in December when we went away to Forest Green and we lost. So going into Tuesday night's game, knowing that, you know, we've played a lot of football, knowing that we probably won't have Houlihan, you know, Hannant might not start. You know, I guess my question is like, what would you take from the Salford game? What would you consider a good result?
Take a point. Classic League Two away game against you know, well fancied opposition, I think. Yeah, I think it is interesting, Jordan. You know, like you say, I think the amount of football that we played, and yet hardly any of it has been against teams that you expect to be up there, is quite odd. And it's a real test, this. Obviously, they dropped points late. I think it was actually Friday night, but against Harrogate. So they'll be desperate to start putting a run together. It feels like Salford, like you expect so much of them because of, you know, the sort of, well, obviously the profile of people that are involved with the running the club and the sort of budget that they've got. And it feels like you've not really heard much about them this season, but they're not that far off us, which is, you know, they just seem to be quite efficient. It's obviously a really tough game. We've beat them before. We can probably do it again. Yeah, this is a real, like, and you know, we are probably repeating ourselves to an extent because we say on every single pod, but this is a real test of our promotion credentials. Not just this, but obviously Crawley. I know they lost. I know they lost Waters, and it's two more really hard games that are coming up. And you know, if you have a look at the fixture list, I think what you sort of look out for is runs of games where maybe you play four or five teams who are sort of down there and you would expect to beat. And like, we just don't have that this season, like, anymore. It's tough game after tough game after tough game. And Salford away at the start of the season, if you ask me about games that I think we'll be up against it, and this would be probably top of my list, to be honest.
Yeah. I guess I'm perhaps doing a misjustice to Leighton Orient. We played them just after Christmas, and they are in and around the playoff picture, I guess. But I guess they're not a, you know, an expected team that you would have in having those sort of top positions like Salford are and others. So, Owen, how do you think we will line up against Salford on Tuesday night? Do you think he might try and risk playing Wes, even if Wes doesn't play a full 90? Do you take that risk to sort of have your stronger lineup out against a good team, or do you think he's completely sort of ruling that out?
I'm not sure. It wouldn't surprise me if he maybe even goes to five up and back and just plays for a draw. I don't know if he will, because we've not really done it very much this season, but and obviously now with Darling gone, doing so would mean Okadina starting, you know, his first league game in a, you know, in a essentially the top of a table kind of clash. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's looking quite likely that Burton's going to be in goal, and he's going to need some kind of protection, isn't he? So, yeah, I don't know if Bonner's just going to set up how he normally does for that, with a kind of 4-4-2 with, you know, either a wide or a narrow middle, which seems to be his preferred option, or if he's going to switch things up a little bit and go a bit more defensive. It's yeah, big challenge for him, I think, to get one right.
Brilliant. And we'll wrap it up with one last question that's come in, talking about, you know, the playoff picture. We're playing another rival for a playoff spot or an automatic spot on Tuesday night against Salford. Had a question come in from Zach saying, realistically, would you be disappointed finishing in the playoffs given, you know, where we are currently?
Probably not disappointed. I don't think disappointed would be the right word. Put it this way, there's a real opportunity for us to get promoted automatically here. We know that our team is certainly the first 11 is one of the best in the division, particularly when you bring Boateng back into that. So in a sense, I guess, yes, because we can do better. The playoffs is my expectation. I think any less than that would be a, you know, that'd be a real disappointment. But I think the other thing you have to take into account, and I don't know if I notice it more now that we're actually involved in the conversation, but there's a lot of teams that you could look at and realistically they would consider themselves, well, in a similar situation to us, I guess, in the top seven is kind of their expectation and anything less would be disappointing. There's probably literally like maybe like 14 teams who could realistically be in that discussion. Someone's going to have to miss out. That's obvious. But I think getting in the playoffs, given the context of the year that we're in or the year that we've had, where we were this time last year, you know, we probably just come off the back of successive 4-0 home defeats. Coldwood sacked. No one really knew what was going to happen long term. People were looking at the structure of the club, people involved in the running of the club. To go from where we were at that point to, you know, discussing if we're going to be disappointed in the top seven, I think that's a real sign of how well we've done more than anything. And what I would say is that we probably need to stop. We're kind of doing ourselves out of a job here. I don't think it's the time to analyse things too much. I think you just have to kind of enjoy where we're at the moment. We're top of the league. Teams below us have games in hand. We're probably not going to finish top of the league. We might finish top of the league. We might not finish in the automatic promotion places. But like, for where we're at with the pandemic and like lockdowns and that sort of stuff, like just enjoy where we're at the moment and don't think too much about future disappointment. But yeah, there's an opportunity. Yeah.
Owen, do you feel that maybe if we were uberly critical, we could maybe say that we've not put enough points on the board these last few games with draws against Bradford and Colchester to sort of really cement ourselves as a top three team, and because of that, it's more likely that we're going to be, you know, in the pack for the top seven rather than say first or second.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the last couple of games, the draws against Bradford and Colchester, were necessarily dropped points. But I think if you go back a little bit to December, to losing to Bradford at their place and losing to Stevenage, they were dropped points. And them results are probably going to be the reason we finish outside of the top three. I reckon realistically there's maybe five clubs that could be challenging for top three, which we're one of them. But yeah, like Tom says, there's probably like 12 to 14 that are going to be challenging for top seven. I'm not going to be too disappointed if we finish outside the top three. I'd like to, but I think there's maybe better clubs than us. But you know, there's certainly clubs who've spent more and have bigger squads and things like that. So yeah, I'm not going to be too disappointed if we finish outside the top three, but I'll be upset. You know, someone's got to miss out on the playoffs. Three or four teams got to miss out on them. Let's not make it us. Yeah, let's carry on playing. We know we've got results in us. We've beat Newport. We've beat Carlisle. We've beat, you know, other decent teams. You know, with Salford. Yeah, we know we can do it. Let's not miss out on this. We've got a really good chance.
I think we've got quite a favourable end of season. It's, you know, we play a lot of teams that will be challenging for the top seven or the top three, but there's not that kind of mad sort of grouping together like we had in, say, September, October, where we play all of them consecutively. It does seem to space out a little bit. So panic not. We're going to squeak third place on the last day of the season for sure. That's it for today. We go again Tuesday night against Salford. We will be back with another podcast in a few weeks' time. Until then, Owen, thank you very much for today.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Tom, thank you very much.
Good to be back.
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you soon.